Right, so this afternoon we're moving on, as I said before, to look at the questions concerning the rapid transit system. And then at the very end, a couple of questions, I think. Is it a couple anyway? Maybe just one. Yeah, just one question relating to mode share strategy. So that's the business for this afternoon. And I'm going to deal with it in a similar way to this morning. So I'm going to take a block of questions, ask specific participants to answer those questions, and then open up to a round of general comments from others. Well, when I say general, I still mean focus on the questions, but not directed specifically to individual participants. Before we start, in the email that was sent out to you enclosing what's now document EXD075, that's a document that sets out a series of questions from me to the authorities about the Rapid Transit System Vision to Plan document and the authorities' answers to those questions. In the email that Andrea, the programme officer, sent out circulating that, I said I would consider whether to invite written responses to it. Now, having looked more closely at it, I think I will definitely invite written responses to it. Today we can deal with matters in there in a more headline fashion, if you like, and leave the detailed comments that anybody wants to make on this paper to your written submissions. I'll get the programme officer to write out with the arrangements for that and set a deadline for it. I still want to hear if you have concerns on what's said in there, but you can do that in a summary form, knowing that you'll have the opportunity to put more detail in writing later. Thank you. All right, let's start then. And so as you'll see, the first block of questions I want to deal with are K, L, M, and N. As you'll see, K and L are about the capital funding and capital costs of the RTS system, and M and N are about commercial viability and pump priming, which are to do with usage of the system and revenue. Those are the two areas we're going to cover first of all. So I think let me just quickly, hopefully quickly, deal with the answer to K by asking the North Essex authorities to refer to if you look at my introduction to this, these two questions in the agenda, so you've got the heading Rapid Transit System for North Essex, my original questions 14, 15, 17, and then below that, the third paragraph down, Mr. Johnson identifies a total allocation in EB087. Now that's the I think that's the Gleeds estimate of costs, isn't it? And we could also refer to EB086, which is the highest viability assessment, because I think as far as RTS is concerned, it reflects Gleeds exactly. So he identifies a total allocation of 230 million, including 10% contingencies. So this is in the 10% contingency scenarios as regards HIAS, for the cost of the RTS, excluding structures and land acquisition. So, first of all, just as a point of fact, If I relate that to table 5.7 in EB079, which is the vision to plan document, table 5.7, the bottom right box in that table sets out the total capital costs based on the higher investment scenario, and the range of costs there within the higher investment scenario is given as 2 to 9.8 to 3 to 3.1 million. And so it appears to me that the 230 allowed for in EB087 and in HIAS corresponds to 2 to 9.8 in that table. Am I right?
Good afternoon. This is the first time I spoke at the examination. I'm Rob Smith from High Associates.
Hello, welcome.
You'll hear more from me next week. So I believe the table you're referring to, the 5.7, the bottom right-hand corner, excludes interim routes. The figures that are in the highest assessment that correspond to the GLEED's work on this study here are the ones which include interim routes.
Ah. Right, so it's not quite as simple as I first thought. Right. Okay, so... first of all then, do you recognise the figure of 230 from GLEED's / HIAS? This, I believe, was gained by adding up the costs of... the costs attributed to RTS, so that's on-site RTS, off-site RTS, and park and ride, including RTS, whatever the phrase is, RTS, can't remember the exact phrase, but there are three elements, essentially, that have the letters RTS in them in each of the three garden community lists of infrastructure costings. Add all those up. Add 10% for contingencies, and you get about 230 million. Is that how you did it, Mr. Johnston?
Yes.
Yeah, yeah. And that's how I got. That's what I got as well. As close as makes no difference. So that's what's allowed for. It seems to me, if you agree, that's what's allowed for in the budgeting. How does that tie back to the costings in Vision to Plan?
I wonder whether it's worth just taking a small...
Can you go closer to your microphone?
Sorry. I wonder if it's worth taking just a small step back. I can briefly explain our costs, my understanding of how it relates to the viability that Rob can come in and just explain a little bit more about.
Okay, so who are you, sorry?
I apologise, I didn't speak this morning. My name is Martin Whittles. I am from Jacobs Consultancy, supporting Essex County Council.
Thank you.
Okay, so the... As is clear in the Vision to Plan document, we have a number of options open. Therefore, we created lower and upper bounds of costs. We also split those costs by route. So we have route 1, route 2, route 3, and route 4. We came up with estimates by a combination of experience on other corridor schemes, cross-checking costs with our highways engineering team, and also benchmarking against other schemes. We worked closely with the viability team to keep them informed of the costs. The approach we are taking No, let's just put the HIF money aside for one second. But the approach we are taking is that Route 1 gets assigned, the cost of Route 1 gets assigned to Tendring Colchester Borders Garden Community. The cost of Route 2 gets assigned to CBB. The cost of Route 3 gets assigned to West of Braintree. Now, the cost in the viability covers, of those routes, covers our lower bound cost. But
sorry, just to be clear, lower bound within the higher investment scenario.
Yes.
Because there's actually four sets of costs, aren't there? There's lower investment, higher and upper bound. Upper and lower bound, high investment, higher investment, upper and lower bound.
Yes.
Yeah. Thank you.
We though, and it should be realised from the outset, though, that we still will be bidding for external grant money. So we, based on the experience of other schemes, such as Bristol, where about 50% of the cost has been provided by external DfT grant money, we expect that is a highly realistic outcome over this sort of the course of what we're talking about. Now, what we haven't got in our viability is Route 4. The reason we don't have that is because of what I said, that long term we do think it is entirely realistic that we will get external grant money. On this basis, we are entirely confident that A, our costs are realistic, B, they are consistent with viability.
Well, can we get into the specifics then? Thank you for that. Thank you for that general introduction and explaining the process. And it is helpful to know, particularly, that you're assigning specific route costs to specific garden communities. So with that in mind, can we then try and tie back what's allocated in the budgets or in the viability budgets to the costs as given in the Vision to Plan document? Can you take me through that?
Yes, sir. It may be useful to illustrate it by going through the tender in Colchester show where the sources
fine.
Are and
yep,
how they fit
fine.
Together.
That's fine.
So as Martin set out there, we have taken across the figures for each of the routes. So you'll see that for the Tendering Colchester Borders RTS Route 1, the values for that are in Table 5.3.
Yep.
And it's the total line, including the interim routes, so the third line up from the bottom. It's the total that we've used.
Yeah.
Yeah.
54.7.
That's correct, yeah.
Lower bound.
Yes.
And it tells you, well, it's lower bound because it's the lower of the two costs in that box. And we know it's higher investment scenario because that's what it tells you in the title of the table.
That is correct.
The first box on the table.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. Thank you.
And maybe come back to that range of costs after I've made them sort of consistent. If the where it is covered in the highest viability work in the EB086 and in the appendices there, the bigger document with all the spreadsheets, there is a worksheet 2 under section 6, which has got the infrastructure costs for Tendering Colchester Border listed in their totality.
Just bear with me. So this is appendices.
Yeah. I may be able to bring up the page number if that would help.
I think the worksheet pages aren't actually numbered. But it's worksheet 2 under Tendering Colchester Borders.
Yes, got that. That's correct.
Yeah, got that.
So in there you will see the same values attributed, albeit that there are, as you've mentioned before, there are three categories there in terms of the RTS on-site network, the RTS off-site network, and a separate allowance for the park and ride, which is integrated into the headline figures of the RTS study.
Yeah.
So they are consistent in the same.
So 10.6 plus 38.1 plus 6 is 54.7.
Yeah. Yes.
Okay. Okay. Now, just tell me a bit more about upper and lower bounds.
From the viability appraisal approach, as you're well aware, there are different levels of contingency applied on top of those values in line with the recommendations that you gave back in June 2018, which applies up to 40% on top of those figures. It may be something for Martin to explain in terms of how that range deals with optimism bias in the RTS study.
Yep.
Yes. In simple terms, our upper bound increased our costs by about 44%. We say in the report that that should be our aim because that matches well with the benchmark schemes that that are based on direct experience of other schemes that have been delivered successfully and is what we anticipate at this strategic planning stage gives us the confidence that we have the right amounts of money assigned for these routes.
So in the report, this is what the Vision to Plan report, you say that the upper bound costs, including a roughly 44% increase, sorry, what 44% uplift on the lower bound costs, that is, sorry, the phrase has gone out of my head. Tell me again what the... I want to say contingency, but I think use a different term.
Yeah, optimism. But I think contingency is a better phrase.
Yeah. Well, whichever. Yeah, yeah. So, and the report says that that should be the aim. When you say relating to benchmark schemes, what do you mean there? That the benchmark schemes came out at that figure, the upper bound figure, or do you mean the benchmark schemes used that level of contingency?
When we developed our costs, one of the checks we did was to compare our estimates with what was spent, was the final outturn costs elsewhere. And we compared it with outturn costs in Bristol and Salford, I believe.
Yeah. And so how does that answer my question? So are you saying that when you did that benchmarking, it was the upper bound costs that most closely reflected the benchmarked schemes?
Yes.
The outturn costs of the benchmark schemes, to be clear about it.
Yes, the outturn cost, which is the most realistic, and this includes the full costs that were eventually spent on these schemes.
Okay.
Hence, we were doing these checks, adjusting our figures during our costing exercise to ensure it was as realistic as possible at this stage in the process.
Adjusting them during the exercise, but the report sets out the final outcome of that process. So everything you did in terms of adjustment is in the final figures that appear in the report.
Yes,
yeah,
it is.
Thanks. Okay. Okay, so then, as I understand it, what happens in the HIAS work is that the lower bound costs are put in as the individual items in the table. So the 54.7 million that we, the three items added up to in the case of Tendering Colchester Borders. And then depending on the depending on which scenario you're looking at in HIAS, 10%, 20% or 40% contingency is added to those costs, as it is to a number of other infrastructure items, as part of the HIAS contingency sensitivities.
That is correct, sir.
Yeah. And it would be the HIAS 40% contingency that would get closest to the upper bound costs as set out in Vision to Plan, and which Mr. Whittle's just said relate most closely to the outturn costs of the benchmark schemes. Is that correct?
That is correct, yes. Okay, there is also, just for information and clarity, sir, an additional 10% for professional fees that's sort of added across all infrastructure items as well.
Okay. Right. And that wasn't specifically, or was it specifically included in the Vision to Plan costs, professional costs?
The professional costs because they're outturn costs for the whole project. Yes, that when we were working out our per kilometre estimates, we were looking at the full amount of money that was required, so that would take into account those type of professional costs.
Okay. So, right. So Vision to Plan includes professional costs. Did you use a specific percentage in
we were using as our basis general knowledge about previously delivered schemes as a full outturn cost. That outturn cost includes all professional fees, some incidentals such as land purchase and capital costs. We then checked it against our highways team in terms of looking specifically at our routes. Yeah. Again, looking at all the costs likely at this stage that we could anticipate. We then compared it against our benchmark using the entire outturn project cost, including all those elements I've mentioned.
Yeah, I'm really sorry you lost me there, because what is it? Which bit includes professional fees, land purchase, and capital costs? Which is it? Which bit includes that?
The
benchmark costs or the Vision to Plan costs?
The vision. Okay, let's the vision. Okay, I'll have another go. The Vision to Plan costs.
Yep.
Is a per kilometre estimate.
Yep, got that.
Right. To derive that per kilometre estimate,
yep,
we triangulated our evidence,
yep,
to come up with those costs, those per kilometre costs. Now, we always considered the entire project cost. What we haven't done, for example, is break that down. So when we looked at the benchmark, we weren't looking at we were looking at the outturn, the total at the end. We weren't looking precisely at how much was spent on professional costs. When we were in discussions with our highways team, we were, you know, clearly, you know, working out estimates of professional costs, which was in the order of about 10%.
I mean, forgive me if I'm wrong, but my understanding has always been that capital cost is what we're talking about, isn't it? So when you say includes capital costs, that is exactly what we're talking about. So when you use the term capital costs, what do you mean?
What is quite typical now is that some costs, such as design costs, are capitalised. So once you get through a process like this, and we start working on a scheme, what may have in the past been considered a revenue cost is capitalized into the project. Hence, when we talk about capital, what we are talking about is everything that is required. The design, personnel, expenses to get that delivered.
All right. Okay, fine. All right. So to cut a long story short then, what I said before isn't quite right, because the 40% scenario in Hias will actually give you a slightly higher figure than the higher bound cost in Vision to Plan, because of the 10% additional professional fees in Hias, which are already included in the Vision to Plan.
That is correct, sir. Yeah. It's the way the Hias model works, and it adds an extra flexibility.
Yeah. Got that. Okay, fine. Thanks. And then if we followed the same process for West of Braintree and for CBB, we'd get the same story coming through. Okay, that's helpful. Thank you very much. So that answers question K, at least as far as the authorities are concerned. Can you look at the next paragraph, then, of my summary, where I've just the bit about Route 1. So the sentence that begins, a total of 45 million is available for Route 1, comprising 33 million from the successful HIF bid, a secured 10 million Section 106 contribution, and 10 million included in EB086. That's grant scenario, I stress. EB086, grant scenario. And based on the lower bound costs in Vision to Plan, this is sufficient to cover costs to 2033. With £10 million left over for post-2033 costs. Do the NEAs concur with that summary?
Yes, sir. In terms of the grant scenarios in the highest viability, that includes that £10 million as referenced.
Okay. And then if you turn to paragraph 6.17A.1 of the authority's hearing statement. what that does is it lists the items in bullet point form which the NEAs say are covered by the HIF funding. You can see the bullet points there. And my interpretation of that, cross-referencing it to the plan of Route 1 contained in the Vision to Plan document, is that those bullet point items include most, or indeed all, of Route 1 apart from the section within Tendring Colchester Borders Garden Community itself, so the on-site section. That, I don't think, is mentioned in the bullet points, nor, I think, is mentioned the section within Colchester Town Centre. Is that correct?
Yes. As for in the HIF bid, just looking at the RTS component, the money, the grant that we have, excludes the route running through the garden community site.
Yeah.
That is estimated at around 10 million, yeah. and that will be the contribution coming from the garden community,
yeah.
As set out in that version of the scenario of the viability. In for the town centre section, because of the time frame of the HIF bid to be delivered by 2024,
yeah.
We didn't want to take on that section, but the cost is covered in the viability. So we are anticipating that will be coming, and that will be further enhancements. And when I say we're not taking it on, there will be some essential priority measures, but in terms of the longer term continued improvements, it'll be coming later in the process. But we do not see that as fundamental to affecting the success of RTS, as evidenced by our modelling and patronage predictions submitted as part of the HIF bid.
Okay, thank you. Okay, thank you very much. Right, can I turn to Mr. Johnston? So you've heard what's been said there. Firstly, is there anything from your point of view that's inaccurate in what's been said there? And then, secondly, can you then give your response to my question L, having?
I can say yes. I'm sitting here slightly perplexed.
Microphone, please.
Sorry, sir.
I'm sitting here slightly perplexed, as I suspect a lot of the audience is, and I don't actually know what the cost of the RTS is. What I would ask is that we have a simple figure, which is what I thought I'd arrived at, 230 million, by adding up the figures, including a simple contingency. So how much is this actually going to cost will be my first point.
Let's deal with that, the whole thing.
Yes, sir. Is it 230 million? Which has a 10% contingency on, according to the report? Is it a bigger figure? If somebody can just give me the actual cost of routes 1, 2 and 3 combined, the 230 million that I put in my question, is that correct, or is it a higher figure, or is it indeed a lower figure? And what contingency does that figure you're going to give me actually contain, please?
But first off, this what we are trying to do here is a quite a long-term scheme. So it is not a, we're not quite at the stage of just saying this is, you know, what we're going to build in the next 5 years. Here's our contingency. So what we have in the vision to plan document, and I think we're quite clear that we're looking over the long term. But in simple terms, if is as we've said, take as our working budget the lower bound of the upper, but we are factoring in a contingency of around 40%. So if that's what if you know that's our starting point.
No, sorry, I asked questions. Thank you. Lower bound of the upper. So, does this take us back to 229.8, or to something else?
In the table that you started this question off, which I think was 5.7, was it?
Correct.
The table of costs.
Yes. Correct.
Yes, that is the right starting point that we should be looking at, and that is the figure that is in the viability assessments.
And that's routes 1, 2, and 3, not route 4.
The table you're referring to, 5.7, has all routes included in it.
All of them?
Yeah.
Right, so if we added up the figures in the final boxes of tables 5.3, 5.4, 5.5, and 5.6, we would get to the figures in the final box of 5.7. Correct?
Yes.
Right. And then when it comes to phasing, I think I'm right in saying that Route 4 doesn't start to get phased until the 2034 period onwards, whereas the other schemes get phased in earlier periods. The other routes, rather.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah, but 229 is a total. 229.8 is a total. Mr. Johnson, you're shaking your head.
Sorry, sir. Yes, it's not 229.8. To get to that, I took 207 and added a 10% contingency. So the correct figure is 207, not 229.8, because you're then going to add multiple different levels of contingency via the viability appraisal, so that the actual cost with no contingency on it is 207 is the figure that we're actually discussing. Is that correct, sir?
Well, wait a minute. That's the figure in highest.
Correct.
Or in Gleanit.
Yes.
Not the figure. It's not the figure in vision to plan. Yeah.
No, I'm.
Yeah, yeah. No, no. That's all right. So, yes. I mean, that's what I started saying, wasn't it? You add up to 207, then you add on 10%.
That's what I got to.
Around about 230.
That's what I got to, sir, yes.
Yeah,
what I'm being told is the contingency varies between 10% and 40%, which I'll come on to in a second if I may. But essentially, the figure with no contingency is 207.
In highest?
Yes.
Yes. And the figure with no contingency including professional costs in vision to plan is 229.8.
But bear in mind the point I mentioned that in the viability we are covering routes 1, 2, and 3. The table you're looking at in number 5.7 includes route 4.
Yes.
So
yes.
it's not actually as simple as that.
Yes, that's a fair point. Yes, indeed. Yeah. Okay, so vision to plan 5.57 is routes 1 to 4 total. Highest total 207 excluding professional fees and contingency is routes 1 to 3. Is that clearer, Mr. Johnston? I think it is to me, which is the important thing.
I'll leave it at that, but if you wish me, I'll move on to question L, if that's
please.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yep. Taking that 207 million figure, the question, therefore, is, with whatever contingency is in it or not, is there sufficient certainty at the planning stage that that figure is correct? And my evidence previously, which was based on my own experience of the designer and builder of the fast-track Route A in Dartford and various other schemes associated with the Nottingham tram system that are currently ongoing, is that it isn't, and it's some way adrift of a proper figure. And I just highlight a number of points that I'd ask you to consider, sir, in considering the actual cost that's been put forward by the local authority. I have seven headings, which I'm sorry, I shall have to raise them all. The first is that the figure contains no CPO, and all of these schemes involve some form of CPO because of the land that's involved. At Dartford, we had to CPO.
I'm sorry to interrupt you, Mr. Johnson.
Yep.
I'm happy for you to give me the headlines. If the detail's in your statement, you don't need to rehearse
problem,
the detail.
Sir. Yep.
So you can just give me the headlines.
The first one is CPO.
Yeah.
The second one is inflation and the inflation related to going forward. Yep. The third one is the missing items. The missing items are things like bridges, sir, that are not been included. The next one is the interim routes, and that is in my evidence, and it was noted earlier on that the interim routes aren't included. These are routes that are necessary to get round bits of missing infrastructure, bits of missing RTS routes.
Yes.
The next one is that you cannot base the costs on published information divided by the kilometres that it actually takes to do it, because that relies on the people that are giving you information to actually tell the truth. In many cases, when I've been asked for information on a commercial basis, I would not give it. If I were to give it, it may well be not including certain things that you do not know about. So I fully appreciate this is your inquiry. I would raise the Uttleford response, and that is that their paragraph 62 raised exactly that issue, that the costs shouldn't be based on deriving costs from routes divided by the route kilometre. They should be based on up-to-date costs on first principles, basically. You simply don't know. There's a big risk of doing that sort of thing. And the next one, sir, is the £25 million relating to Eastern Park. As to whether that's still an appropriate contribution, I'll leave others to make that. That is at the bottom of the question there. And the final one, sir, is the contingency. And my question is that, having started with a contingency of 68%, I think it was 64%, and I asked the County Council this morning as to what their contingency on the roads were, and their contingency was 40%. More detailed design equals certainty was the comment I got back from the county this morning, and less options. I would put forward that we should not be considering any contingencies that are lower than the original contingency, which was 64%. Surely at this stage, very little has moved forward, very little has advanced. If I was looking at it, I would think to myself, is 64% a reasonable figure? But certainly going up from 10%, 20%, 30%, even the 40% at this point are highly optimistic. I would suggest many, many things come out of the woodwork, not least the CPO, of course, and that always needs to be included. So those are my headings, sir, and those I don't think are in any way covered by the 207 million, which in comparison to a scheme that I actually built is about a third.
I recognise that figure from what you said,
yeah.
Indeed.
Okay.
What you said in your statement.
Thank you, sir.
Just on contingencies again. So first of all, 64%... original. So you're referring back now to the earlier Jacobs documents, the first RTS report, are you?
Yes, sir, that's the NERTS report.
Yeah. And so I hear what you're saying there. You think it should be 64%. I think to be fair to the authors of Vision to Plan, Mr. Whittles did say... that the upper bound figure, which includes a 44% uplift, relates most closely to the benchmark schemes and would be the most appropriate cost estimate at this strategic stage. So to be fair to the authors, they see the case for a 44% contingency at this strategic stage. Okay, thank you very much for that. Mr. O'Connell, do you want to add anything to what's
been said? Thank you, sir. I would like to make what I believe is effectively a factual observation here. I think, of course, in this examination, there are areas which are subjective, but there are areas which are objective as well. You allude to this in your overview of the various points made. Jacobs have just expressed that they believe that the costs, the capital costs, match the comparables. That in itself is not correct. 4.6 and 5.5 are the comparables for Bristol and Salford, not adjusted for inflation, which I'll briefly come back to in a second. The average for the NEA route is 4.1. So even it's lower than the lower of the two comparables by over 10%. But, yeah, of course.
Let me check that. Can you take me? There's a table that makes that comparison, isn't there? Can you take me to it?
Yes. So EB079
yep.
would be on page 53, 50. Table 5.2.
Right. Just bear with me. 53, 5.2. So this is capital cost estimate benchmarking. Higher investment cost, 4.1 per kilometre for routes 1 to 4.
And that number is a midpoint of the low and high end of the high investment case.
That's
going to
be my question.
Yeah.
So it's midpoint.
Well, that's my understanding from the text.
Is that right? Yeah, midpoint of low to high. So what would it be if we took the high point, what would it be? Do we know the answer to that? I may have asked that question in my further questions. I may have asked you to give a per kilometre breakdown, because I don't think that appears in the report itself, does it? Maybe I didn't ask you to. No, perhaps not.
I would observe, if it's helpful from just a brief mental arithmetic calculation, that the high end of the higher investment case might sit in the middle of the Bristol and Salford costs before they're adjusted for inflation.
Okay.
I'm taking that by saying that the difference between the low and high end of the higher investment case is about 30%, and just multiplying up the 4.1
All right.
for 30%.
That's impressive. Thank you.
I note that we don't use the high end of the higher investment case anywhere, but that would be the number.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you. And then you're going to move on to inflation, were you?
Yes, if I may briefly. It's a simple fact that Bristol and Salford were built further back in time. Construction, labour, material, cost, inflation is just an economic fact. There's no this is an objective fact. These scheme outturn costs are taken at their original point in time and not adjusted for inflation. That to me is just an error in the evidence base. And it means that even the high end of the higher investment case, the scheme we are looking at here is at a discount to the comparables. I note, just to finish, that there is no evidence as to why we should be at a discount to the comparables, or indeed whether the comparables are the right ones in the first place or whether they produced any significant modal share change. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. All right. Can I turn to the authorities to respond to those points, please? And then I'm going to move on to my next two questions before I open up to others to come in.
Okay. On the comments around the benchmark.
Yep.
Before I mentioned that what we were trying to do is triangulate, and we were looking to see if we were in the right ballpark, which is appropriate at this point in time. We are not, at this strategic planning stage, coming up with a precise cost plan that you would see once you are in the design stage, when you would break it down and include the elements that have been mentioned. What we were doing is triangulating against different sources to check there was consistency, which is what was achieved. Secondly, there was a mention alluding to schemes just such as Fast Tracked, where costs on certain sections were far higher. It's interesting that the project director of Fast Tracked was the engineer who I checked the costs with. He gave me completely different information from published information on the costs of Fast Track. So I think it is misleading to indicate that, you know, the costs are far out to what would actually be realised in reality.
Sorry to interrupt then, yeah. Mr. Riggles. So an engineer from Fast Track gave you different costing information from what Mr. Johnston's presented. You said it was published information.
Yes, it was. I spoke to the consultants who were involved in delivering Fast Track to ask them what were the costs, and taking into account this is a number of years ago, when they looked over a stretch, the costs were on average about under two million per kilometre. Although that you do need to take into account inflation to that, so hence it was. It would take it to within the in the area of the benchmarks we were looking at, and that is the experience of other schemes. It is also the experience of recent costs of what has been incurred on the Belfast glider scheme. So again, we have confidence that we are talking about the right order of magnitude of costs. Mm-hmm.
Okay, thank you.
Matt, could I sort of address some of the specific points from Mr. Johnson as well? CPO, I think we are actually quite clear in the report. We are quite clear in the report that we are not taking into account the large sections of new land that would be acquired on the garden communities. That purchase and that acquisition of the land is part of the land purchase that will happen as part of the garden community developments. Within our benchmark costs, there was anticipation of small, less significant compensation events or land purchase that would be needed. As an example, within our costs for Route 1, which have obviously been worked up in a lot more detail, which also agree with our estimates, we have included elements for compensation where we think that is necessary.
So this is in vision to plan. In the estimates for Route 1, in vision to plan, there is an allowance for CPO compensation payments.
Where, as part of our checking process, so that's the middle point of my triangulation, yeah. When we consulted with the highways engineers, we were able to draw on the more detailed cost estimation work we had done as part of the HIF.
Okay, thank you.
We should also take into account that the costs are bound to be different than somewhere like Bristol, because we are dealing with an area with significant amounts of greenfield. So the cost is different than being in a built-up area. So hence, the fact we're not at the top end of our benchmark is completely appropriate. I made some general points, but is there any specific point that Mr. Johnson made that you want me also to respond to, or is it maybe going
not
to be a further
stage,
question?
Thank you.
Okay.
No, thank you very much. The one thing I would like to ask you is, if it's not in vision to plan, and forgive me for not knowing everything, that's in vision to plan, if it's not in vision to plan, can you give me the kilometre end-to-end figures for each of the RTS routes in kilometres, please? Not now. I don't ask you to get your scale rule out now, but in due course, if you can provide it. If it's in VTS, I just need a reference. If it's not in VTS, give me the figures, please.
We can do that for you, sir.
Thank you. Right, I'm going to move on to the next two questions. Bearing in mind, I'm still on the targeted questions bit. We do need to try and make progress, so let's try and speed this up a bit. So now we're looking at commercial viability, which brings in usage and revenue of the revenue costs and usage, which translates into income of the RTS scheme. In my introduction, I talk about the modelling, what NEA say about the modelling, and what Mr. Johnston says about the modelling. And then I talk about pump priming, which is the subject of question N. Now, I say I'd like to try and keep this brief, and I've made it clear I'm going to accept written responses to the Council's EXD075, which contains more information on modelling than was available when my questions were first put out. When my original questions were put out. But having read EXD075, Mr. Johnston, in summary form, can you tell me what your position is now on the modelling vis-à-vis what the authorities have said about it?
Yes, sir. The fundamental concerns I have still remain, and irrespective of whether the EMI model or any of the other models have been used in what I say they've been used or what the NEA says they've been used, I still have three fundamental concerns with the modelling. The first is that it's based on 2011 census data. The second is that it's based on 2014 traffic counts. And the third, it's based on an AM peak only. And as we said this morning, they can, on the AM peak hour only.
Yeah.
If you're looking at revenue, you need to understand the 24-hour period and indeed weekends as to how many people are going to use your bus service. I just raise one issue, if I may, with those three, just to give you an example of how out of date that sort of information can be. Is I'm one of these rare people that drive an electric car, and my electric car cost me about 20 pence a mile to operate. My Audi, which I've got outside, cost me 20 pence a litre to operate, my apologies, the equivalent price of an electric car. My Audi cost me 125 and I filled up this morning for 130. It's about a sixth of the cost. So if you're using traffic data that does not include counts and surveys of people who own electric cars or are going to own electric cars in the future, then you are going to get a significantly wrong answer. I use my electric car for all local journeys because it's cheaper. If you give somebody a new house on one of these developments, you give them an electric charging point and they buy an electric car for whatever the cost is, they're going to use that continuously. And your predictions for revenue on the RTS have to take account of modern, up-to-date information. Equally, as we heard this morning, Stansted is due to expand dramatically, and that will involve a large number of employees that couldn't have been taken into account when the modelling work was done. It simply hadn't been put in. So as I say, I reiterate, sir, that those three fundamental issues, 2011 census data is completely incredible for use at the moment because it's just too old. 2014 is way beyond the DfT's web tag criteria for modelling, and the AM peak hour is next to useless when you've got an employee like Stansted Airport who is sitting right on the most congested junction in the neighbourhood, where people may well travel to work in the morning because they can get there easily, there are no flights. They may well not be able to get home in the evening because it's exactly opposite, and vice versa. So their choice of whether they use a car in the day is dependent on both peak hours. It's not just dependent upon the AM peak hour, which is what's been used and extrapolated out. So irrespective, I won't go into any of the details I mentioned in my report, sir, and we will obviously respond in detail in writing to the new information. Those three fundamental points make this completely unsuitable for use in this sort of analysis.
Thank you. As I understand it, the 2011 census data was used to provide the origin destination information for the model. Is that's right?
That's correct, sir. Yes.
What would you use then?
I would have done surveys, sir. I would have gone out.
Because even there's no more recent census.
No, that's correct, sir. 2021, I would have commissioned let's call it 20,000, 30,000 quid's worth of survey, mm-hmm. and I would have gone there and I would have asked people why they're travelling to work, how they're travelling to work. I would have used phone data. You can get all of that sort of information. I would have set up a whole series of different processes, as indeed we did at Coventry for the government on the JLR scheme recently. And it starts from a completely different perspective. I say electric cars and Stansted kill the models that have been used to predict the number of people are going to travel on the RTS. They are completely wrong. They're bound to be because of those two bits of information.
On pump priming, this is a question I think for the NEAs. I've quoted section 5.4.1 of Vision to Plan. Saying an element of pump priming, early subsidy to generate patronage will be required for the RTS. Is that included in the HIAS modelling, please?
Yes, so there are allowances for each of the garden communities for investment in early phase bus and rapid transit services, which add up to a total of around 20 million across the three sites.
Right. Okay, so it's the early phase item that one looks to for that. Okay, that'll do for now, thank you. Response from the authorities to... Oh, sorry, Mr. O'Connell, you've got a... You wanted to speak?
Yes, thank you, sir. Two points.
One on pump priming, given we've just discussed it, if that's okay. I just draw your attention, we include in our evidence, Mr. Johnson informed me that in relation to fast track route A, which is what we're discussing, the required pump priming, which was section 106 funded, was 2/3 of the capital cost. I believe what we've just heard in terms of a pump priming allowance sounds like it's under 10%. The second point is a more fundamental one, which I believe fits under question M, but I'm happy to, if it would fit better later, that's fine. The very important point in relation to operational viability and route three being the Stansted through to Braintree route. EP079 is actually a little confusing in this point because the maps really only show west of Braintree going east towards Braintree. But of course, what is clear is that the route is actually involves Stansted to Great Dunmo to Eastern Park, then to west of Braintree, then to Braintree. And in fact, we've referred to it in our hearing statement. I'm not sure if it's in the NEA's evidence base. Jacobs, of course, prepared a document for Uttlesford, a similar vision to plan document, and the NEA one. They're not the same, but they're talking about the same scheme. Route 3 is the same. There's only one route across Uttlesford and the Braintree part of the NEA's. The patronage for Route 3 is roughly split equally, the Uttlesford document makes clear, between Eastern Park and west of Braintree. Assuming, as I think we must assume there's a very good chance of, that Eastern Park either A, does not proceed, B, proceeds late in much smaller size because of historic environment concerns raised, or C, just proceeds very late, none of the operational modelling for the plan period for Route 3 can be valid given the inspector's decision in relation to Uttlesford. And in fact, furthermore, I would make a couple of observations. One, the only bit of the route guaranteed in the diagram as green, which is segregated, was actually the part in Uttlesford. So the quick journey time of Route 3 is largely predicated on the bit in Uttlesford. That goes through Eastern Park, which the council does, Uttlesford doesn't own the land for. So how that route can now proceed is unclear. Secondly, there is only one route shown. There's only one route shown to get from west of Braintree through to Stansted. So assuming Eastern Park is not going ahead, we have no route in the evidence base for Route 3. I guess, thirdly, one's left with all sorts of difficult points around how do you actually get the land to build a route, a material Route 3. If it's your local plan, but there's a different local plan which is not going ahead, you can't CPO in someone else's authority, etc., etc. But it's probably best not to dwell on those for now.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I will open up to others in a moment, but I want to ask for a response to those specific points from Mr. Johnson and Mr. O'Connell first, please.
So I'll kick off with the transport model question, just at a very high level. I think it's misleading to think that all we have used is a 2011 census and 2014 traffic counts. The model was created, seeded using 2011 census information for public transport movements, but it used the far more recent A120 Saturn model to also get OD movements for for car traffic, some of which is appropriate for people switching modes. We also have something called a gravity model, where we took into account how the distribution changes once you create new garden communities. We also took into account travel survey information collected at Stansted, particularly about their employees. So hence, it is, I think, misleading to think that the model is somehow based only on a 2011 situation of how people moved around. I do agree with Mr. Johnson. He makes a good point about saying, you know, we should do more surveys, and we should actually have a more recent base for the model. I absolutely agree, because that is what we're doing and have underway in Colchester. But that is appropriate only once we have actually got through this process, because it is we can only justify the expenditure on that once we are into the design phase, through this process. And as shown in Colchester, that is precisely what we are doing. And it is, you know, but it is far more costly than £20,000 or £30,000 for a few surveys. Also, we have to bear in mind that we are not in a large city here. When we are in a large city such as London, Bristol, Coventry, we typically have always up-to-date transport models that we can use that are kept up to date. You cannot expect that same level of modelling tools to be available in towns such as the size of Great Dunmo, Colchester, etc. Okay, I'm not going to say any more about the modelling because I know we don't want to get into technical details. On pump priming depends on the amount of patronage you think you are going to actually pick up as well. The amount that is in the viability is proportionate to the amount we expect we will need. Bear in mind, in Route 1, in consultation with the public transport operator Go Ahead, we are confident, because of the destinations we are going through, it is going to reach profitability very early in the process. That is the same on Route 2, on the west side of Colchester, because of the amount of existing passengers that could start to use the service and the destinations we are connecting. That also matches the experience in other schemes, such as Belfast, where their 2030 projections for patronage were met within the first 2 years of operation. In Route 3, I do take the point around, you know, how do we adapt if we did not have Eastern Park? However, we have modelled what happens if we have to divide this into two separate schemes, have one going into Braintree, one going into Stansted, and they're not being joined. It works. Also, perversely, because there is ample capacity on the A120, if we can't take a route through Eastern Park, journey times to Stansted would actually be quicker. Therefore, we are, based on interpreting the evidence we have submitted and the model runs we have done, noting the spare capacity on the A120, we are confident that should Eastern Park not be delivered, our Route 3 works.
You've modelled East and West sections of Route 3 separately, you say?
Yes, we have.
Is that in here?
This was included at the time of the Uttlesford examination. I think it is not a evidence document as part of this examination, but can be submitted clearly as further evidence.
So it was submitted to Uttlesford, but not to me.
Correct.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I'll have a think about whether I need to see that. We heard evidence this morning about congestion levels on the A120 west of Braintree, so I don't need to be reminded of that, thank you, now. All right, does anybody else want to contribute? I can see a lot of boards going up. Please be very focused. Please do not repeat anything that's been said before. Otherwise, we're going to seriously run out of time. On that basis, can I go around the table? Mr. Johnston.
Yes, just two very quickies, sir. The first one relates to the need or not to provide full information at a examination in public. I'll just draw your attention to the Uttlesford point. It's number 8, sir, and I'll leave it at that, which concludes that. The second is in relation to pump priming. The fast-track Route A achieved viability of the sheet in front of me in year 13. It took 13 years to actually fully become viable. And the Section 106 contribution figure that was included originally was 20 million, and that was the equivalent at that time of devaluing the land from 1 million an acre to £850,000 an acre, 15% reduction in land values. And that was the assigned contribution or the assigned loss due to pump priming. That was only one route, and that route connects Dartford to Bluewater, which is the biggest shopping centre in the country. And Dartford obviously has a very nice connection to London, and there's a whole wedge load of employment between that site and the other. This is three routes. We're talking at least three routes, and the loss is at 20 million. And that 20 million from Fast Track, it relates to 2003 prices. That was when the original predictions were done. Is a long, long way out, sir.
Thank you. Mrs. Luxford-Bourne.
My point was about usage as well. Just wanted to know whether the pump priming included a reduced fare as first offer students of the university, because obviously the university is by far the biggest amount of people that are likely to use that, and obviously the route now doesn't go through the university, which means you're competing with first that do, and they do offer a subsidy.
I'll be quick, and I apologise if I've got this wrong, because it was something raised at the start of this section. But if I understood correctly, the RTS into Colchester town, so the town section is not planned to be completed before the Garden Community Development will go ahead. So I wondered, what impact does that have on non-RTS use of the A133 into the town centre from that garden community? So if it isn't there, then clearly, yeah, people aren't going to be able to use it because their main use is to get into the town centre.
Yeah, I think it's going to be there. I think it was just a question of whether specific measures in the town centre would have been completed by then. I think it's the point, is it not? Yeah. It would go into the town centre. The question is whether all the measures that are planned for the town centre would be in place at that point or at a later point, which I think is what's intended.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Thank
right.
you.
Thank you.
Yeah, I'm finding it slightly difficult to shoehorn my comments into some of these questions because they tend to overlap. And my starting point is that the ambitious mode share, which I know you've got later maybe in a slightly different context, of only 30% of trips by private car. That's not achieved anywhere in the UK, not even in London. So in relation to the viability, as Mr. Johnson has outlined, I think these are totally underestimated, not least because the most favourable route in the Jacobs report showed the route was going right through the centre of Colchester and right through the centre of Braintree. Now, neither of those two things would be easy from a purely practical point of view, leaving aside any other consideration. And the examples that are given of rapid transit systems are generally in small geographic areas, not over a route this length, and they are mainly overseas where the government funds the service. Often they operate it as well. I mean, and by government, I mean maybe local government. But and also, the income from users very rarely, if ever, covers the total cost, which is not what's envisaged here. And I think the other big omission is the underestimate of the intra-community services. I think they will be significant, because if the main core service is going to operate at a five-minute interval, then the connecting service, however you describe it, has to be of a similar frequency.
Thank you. Councillor Dundas, isn't it? Yeah.
Thank you, sir. Yeah, it was just a comment really about the comparators we're using. Now, Colchester, depending on which signs you like, is either Britain's oldest recorded town or city. And we're comparing with Salford. Now, the town centre of Colchester, it wasn't designed for the car, it wasn't designed for a bus, and it's not designed for a rapid transport system either. And that is the critical part, because the reason the bus systems don't work at the moment, which we may expand on under question O, is because all the buses get stuck there, the timetables fall apart, so nobody will use them because they're very unreliable. So that is the key part to whether this will be successful or not. The reality is, places like Salford were substantially built after 1945, and have actually been rebuilt in about the last 20 years. So we're not talking about a sort of medieval old town centre. So in terms of the cost per kilometre, when you look at the complication of actually putting a priority route through Colchester town centre, which I will say again is vital for this to work, I'm concerned whether we're comparing like for like, and I would actually disagree with the comment about our scheme being substantially greenfield. I would say it's the opposite. I would say the key part is not greenfield, it's through a very, very difficult geographical area.
Finlay. I've got two points. I'll be as quick as possible in terms of time. The first one's just on the A120 comment regarding ample capacity. I know we touched on it this morning, but it's just to clarify whether that's referring to the upgraded version of the A120 with the RIS2 funding or not. And if it is to do with the RIS2 funding, does that mean that that point is dependent on the upgraded A120 coming forward? And the second wider point I'm making is in terms of the From Vision to Plan document. Appendix A of that document is clear that in the modelling there are trips to and from Stansted Airport and also to and from trips within the Uttlesford district. Given the concerns from Mr. Johnston and Mr. O'Connell earlier, if that route isn't delivered, how do those trips affect the rest of the network and the resultant viability of the network?
Mr. Babb.
Thank you, sir. I had a comment in relation to what sufficiency means in your questions L and M, sufficient certainty of the various things you've referred to. I would respectfully suggest that the degree of sufficiency that you should be looking for is sufficient confidence that the RTS is capable of being delivered and sustained. Sufficient confidence that the RTS is capable of being delivered and sustained, assuming you think it's necessary to make the relevant communities sustainable. I obviously say capable, channeling the note that I provided to you earlier, but I just wanted to flag up, therefore, that I understand why the questions are phrased as they are, but I suggest you don't need to be looking for certainty, but capability. On whether the RTS is necessary to make our garden community sustainable, Mr. Burbage would like to say quite a lot. I apprehend that, question P is really what, where you want to deal with that rather than these questions. We'd like to address you on it, but I'm assuming now is not the time, but question P is the time. But if we don't want to miss our turn, in which case I'll tell Mr. Burbage to hold fire for now. Thank you.
Mr. Norrington. Norrington, I beg your pardon.
Thank you. Without wishing to labour any of the previous points, I think the comment made by the councillor over there about practicality of getting through Colchester town centre is absolutely crucial, especially from the eastern side where Route 1 will operate. And secondly, following up Andrea Uxford-Vaughan's question about subsidy, are we talking about capital subsidy here or revenue subsidy?
Mr. Rust.
Yes, thank you, sir. Just two or three points, really. Answering something, there's suggestions that comparables are dangerous, and I think that's quite clear from the discussion today that they are. We'd like to set those out in perhaps some further evidence in response to the written invitation to provide some written evidence on that. I think that could be useful for you. Sorry. So we will provide some more on that. Just on the high end, end of those sort of comments that have been flying around, that there are quite considerable greenfield elements of development that will bring those costs down, and I think that's reflected quite clearly in the table 5.2. Comparables, a lot of those are for very large urban areas with lots of difficult sites, and as Mr. Johnson will know, that Dartford is one of those very difficult sites to deliver on, so I think that's quite useful. The other point, there's discussion about spare capacity on highways and reference this morning about some very high degrees of saturation on the A120. I must admit, I'm not familiar with them. They don't accord with the discussions we've had with the Highways England to date, nor from my experience at Stansted. So I just put that out there, that the view of bus rapid transit being able to use public existing highways for elements of it seems to be a sound assumption, and we're working on that basis, not from large chunks of the alignment, but for those alignments where it's appropriate, and that does obviously bring the cost down. The third point really is about employment at Stansted. I believe that the Stansted employment growth figures were included in the modelling, and that would be quite important. Perhaps that can be confirmed by others. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Point L, focusing on certainty, costs and funding sources. I felt that we covered certainty in terms of costs across all the routes. I felt we covered funding certainty really related to Colchester tendering borders, not so much as participants in respect of the other elements of the scheme. So I would say there is still considerable uncertainty with the funding sources of those other elements. We heard 50% quoted as what DFT covered at Bristol. Is it a I don't know what the baseline working assumption here is of the what the ask might be. 50% of 230 million is 115 million. Okay. And I just want to park that in terms of there's no bid has been made yet. And it's on top of, we're still waiting for a £500 million award for the A120, £522 million minimum. We are still waiting for a £230 million award for diverting the A12. And now we apparently are waiting for a £115 million award for against a bid that's not been made yet for the RTS sections beyond routes 1, 2 and 3. And so that is quite a cumulative ask and quite a cumulative level of uncertainty and quite a cumulative level of incapability at the moment as we stand in terms of the delivery of this project as a whole.
We've strayed a bit into question O. And so I'm going to invite comments on that before I invite responses. Now, this question is quite carefully constructed, and I hope you're going to respect the way it's constructed. I have had an awful lot of written evidence telling me how difficult it is to provide bus priority along various parts of the suggested RTS routes. And I've read all that, and I will take it fully into account. You don't need to tell me anything more about that. I will be able to make my own judgment based on what I've read about whether or not the difficulties are as you say they are or not, and if they are, what that will what the implications that will have in terms of people's willingness to use the RTS service, levels of patronage, and so on. So I don't need to be told any more about that. I'm asking a different question. What I'm saying is, can they run the bus service at all? Is there anything in what's been said that makes it impossible to run a service along the routes, the route options being put forward by in the vision to plan document? Now, that's what I'm asking. I mean, it may not be what you want to tell me about, but that is what I'm asking because I've already got all the rest of it. Okay. So, does anyone want to give me an answer to that question? And if so, I'll hear them now. Mrs. Luxford-Vaughan.
No to buses. If it becomes articulated, then there would be problems. If it was to become articulated later, Osborne Street and Head Street present problems for it.
Councillor Abbott. Thanks, sir.
Thank
you. I'll say a bit more about Route 4 later, but my comments are about Route 4, and there's two alternative routes for that. I think it would be, the word impossible is a strong word, but very close to it, to run a RTS, either a bus or a tram, through either of those options on a once-per-8-minute basis. So that's what the aim is. So if you take alternative one, Braintree East, for Route 4, you have severe pinch points in Coggeshall, which is a medieval and post-medieval conservation area where it's priority working. You can only get one car through at a time. Extremely difficult to run buses both way through there unless you're proposing to demolish homes. Similarly, the bridge over the River Blackwater at Bradwell, you can get buses over it. Buses do go over it, but it's a constraint. Alternative two has similar pinch points to Coggeshall within Kelvedon, which again is a medieval and post-medieval conservation area. There is very significant on-street parking because the houses simply don't have parking provision. And so if you were to run buses both ways through there, it's possible, but it would be extremely difficult.
Thank you. Mr. O'Connell.
Thank you, sir. I've already mentioned it, but I must come back to it in the context, I feel I must come back to it in the context of the evidence base. There is only one route from west of Braintree to Stansted within the evidence base. It is no longer feasible. It is impossible. Jacobs had briefly alluded to something that is not in the evidence base, not the modelling, the route. The route is not in the evidence base. And what we're talking about, just to be clear, we're talking about moving from a green segregated line through Eastern Park, Dunmo, a direct route through to Stansted, not getting caught up in the Stansted roundabout, etc., to just running in traffic. This is not a BRT route that Jacobs are proposing. But regardless, it's not in the evidence base.
Thank you. I hope this isn't pushing it, but it's impossible to run a bus at 60 kilometres an hour down the Cotford Road, as set out in the hearing statement from the authorities. Because it's a 30 limit, and that's 37 miles an hour.
It's starting to push it, I'm afraid. Yeah, but. I'm going to cut that short in view of the time and in view, as I say, of all the evidence I've seen on it, which I'm very confident I've got the full picture on that. So can I ask the authorities to respond to the points made on that and the points made earlier on the other questions, please?
I'll start off in the... ones I noted, and then Alan, I'll pick up anything I've missed. First, the university question. We are in discussions with the university about the best way to serve the university. It is likely and a possibility that we can split routes. So we'll have fast routes along the A133 serving the Knowledge Gateway, for example, but we will still have routes going round the Boundary Road. In terms of costs the charges for using the bus, at the moment we are underestimating the likely revenue slightly because we don't take into account all the student growth, but we haven't specifically taken into account student subsidies there. But there again, we're not taking into account student growth. On the Colchester Centre, or getting through Colchester Town Centre, in any BRT rapid transit scheme that goes through a town centre, you will clearly have slower, it'll move slower through the town centre. Our current modelling assumes we are travelling with the speed of normal traffic. We should not forget, though, that the town centre of Colchester already does have some bus priority within there. And our plans very clearly are actually including the stop infrastructure, even though I am saying, you know, some of the longer term road infrastructure won't be there from the outset. Within that, there was a comment alluded to about articulated buses. We have our engineering team does have the turning circles used of the newer generation of articulated buses. That is far different from the articulated buses that were used, let's say, 10 years ago. So I'm not saying we would, but it's not a showstopper if we should do that. And as part of our ongoing work on the HIF, we have been looking at the detailed feasibility of getting such vehicles around the network and dealing with the problems within Colchester. There was a comment on connecting services. It's worth sort of bearing in mind about the design principles on garden communities, because we are following the Garden City principles. This means that when we start out, it'll be designed with a small number of houses able to easily access RTS halts and stops and the service. As the garden community grows, it will include high quality walking routes, so people will be able to walk to the RTS stops. As it grows further, there will be high quality cycling routes. At some point, once it reaches a certain size, and these are big sites we are talking about, yes, we will need additional services. This is in many years, though. There will be opportunities to use solutions such as on-demand public transport and even autonomous public transport shuttles. But that is a long way in the future, and we will have the density of population to support such services. In relation to the A120, we heard, and I'm afraid this does take it back to a comment this morning, where there was concern about the capacity on the A120. Within the ME model that we have, as part of our checks on the rapid transit, we look at the capacity on the A120. In 2050, as HE Highways England alluded to this morning, there is capacity on the links there. That's not saying there won't be some junction improvements necessary along the route, but there is capacity on the A120 within our models. The fact we don't mention it in the reports is because it wasn't a problem that we felt we had to address. On the A120, on the other side, on the east of Colchester, on the east of Braintree, between Braintree and CBB, yes, at the moment, because this is Route 4 is post-2033, we are assuming we have the new A120 in place, and then we will consider our route option, one of those options being running along the old A120. Once, of course, it's been freed of traffic. If the A120 scheme doesn't happen for some reason, well, the beauty of BRT and the rapid transit system we are proposing is its flexibility. And it is that flexibility that when I look at question O, I clearly say everything is possible with BRT, because even if there is one route we think will cause difficulties, we can always find an alternative. And our modelling has not been over ambitious. It has always assumed quite low speeds, taking aside the point where you noted something where we exceeded the speed limit. But again, that is in the future. That's in a future scheme when we have opportunity to change and adapt depending on how people use it. So it's that flexibility. And what we are planning here is not partly, and the evidence by work on HIF, the practicalities of getting it on the ground now, which we are successfully doing. As an example of that, look at the journey times and consistency of journey times we achieve between Colchester North Park and Ryde in the town centre. We are typically always within 10 minutes to 12 minutes in the morning peak. I know this because I recently carried out some bus surveys. There is no reason to assume our engineering team cannot achieve the same reliability on the other sides of Colchester. So hence for question O, it is possible to run the bus service. Is the subsidy capital or revenue? We are considering it will be applied as a revenue expense to subsidise these initial services, which is a revenue cost. Stansted employees, thank you for the reminder. Stansted growth has been included in the model, as has all other local plan growth. So it is, while I'll be the first to admit there are many improvements we can make to the model, it is entirely appropriate at the standard stage, at the strategic stage, and where we have been able to source the information, be it from Stansted, be it from local plan, be it from other employment sites, we have included it in the model. Certainty over funding of routes. I think it is a good question. And we have been very clear about what's happening in Colchester. But I think there may be the question, I would say there was a slight misunderstanding in terms of what I meant. What our position is that we have funding within the viability assessment, identified in the viability assessments of the garden communities. Our fallback is that is the money. If these garden communities happen, that is the funding we will use, and that is in our plan, and that is sufficient. Because what we are doing will be successful, and we know it will be successful because of schemes that have gone in the ground, such as Belfast, such as Crawley, such as Bristol Metrobus, other examples, we think we should be applying for external grants and drawing in more money. But our funding strategy doesn't entirely depend on that. I'm going to stop there, and because and I'll let Alan.
Thank you. I think Martin's done a fairly comprehensive job, but there's a couple of points that I'd just like to make if I can. And I think that's around, it's touching a little on, but not repeating what Martin's suggested already around the infrastructure. And I think, as he mentioned, a good example that we've got is what we put in place on the existing Colchester Park and Ride, where we knew that we couldn't provide priority for the whole of the routing, but we dealt with the pinch points, put in the required measures so that we could guarantee that journey time reliability and that journey time, that the length of journey time that's consistently run to just now. And I think, as touched on, the Belfast glider example is a good example of that, where there's not a lot of segregated infrastructure, but again, it's targeted priority measures to ensure that we can get the rapid transit vehicles through where we are at pinch points. There are a number of pinch points, whether it be structures, parked vehicles, historic town centres. Absolutely, there are challenges there, but none of them are precluding us looking at a solution to get something to ensure that we can run a consistently attractive and rapid transit service.
Thank you very much. I think it's time to take a break. What I'm going to do after the break is carry on going through the questions on the same basis as I've been done so far. And at the end, I'll give an opportunity for further comments on anything that's been said throughout the afternoon. So if anything you want to come back on what been said before the break, there will be an opportunity later on to do that. Okay. Take a break now and return at 4 o'clock, please.
Please hold. Your meeting has been temporarily adjourned. Please hold, 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 your meeting has been temporarily adjourned.
Long day, but this is the last lap, so let's press on. So we're on the question P. As I say, we'll come back to give you an opportunity to come back on other points, on the earlier questions to do so. But before I go on to P, can I just make one thing clear about the invitation that you'll be getting to respond to PXD 075, the questions that I put to the authorities on the vision to plan document and the answers to that document. The invitation comment is specifically a comment on what is said in that document. It's not an open invitation on anything that is said today, anything to do with transport and other infrastructure. It's specifically an opportunity to comment on this document because it's coming to a relatively late stage. Phasing of the RTS, whether it's realistic, whether it's consistent with defining the garden capacity or not.
The answer to your question is yes. The NEAs refer to regard the community to once they have transformative projects. The RTS is an essential principle within the regard of communities. So that is the known system.
Defining what RTS is. I think this is not the